podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It was that weird thing. I was like, do I want to use up a Palace slot for MacArthur? And I was like, why am I thinking that about Palace players?
Fantasy Football Show. Hello everyone, my name's James. Welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents, looking to a big encounter in game week 9 and two teams that might very shortly get our attention from an FPL perspective. Let me first introduce you to our Crystal Palace correspondent, Mig Tavius. How are you, Mig?
Hey, not too bad, lads.
Shout out your dinner, please, Mig, for the benefit of those on YouTube. Mix decided to turn up to this podcast with his dinner.
I thought this was the chips episode.
No, that's not for a couple of months yet.
Oh,
mate.
Okay.
And let me introduce you to our Newcastle United correspondent, Simon Bibby. How are you, Si?
Oh, I'm very well, mate. I've been fantastic, actually, I'd say, compared to the last few times I've been on this pod.
I can bet, mate. Did you bring your dinner?
No, I did bring a can, though. But I've drunk one more beers, so, and I'm driving after this podcast, so just a cherry coke.
Lovely. Mig, let's start with yourself, as obviously you're the home team ahead of this fixture at the weekend. How pleased are you with Palace's start, mate?
Very pleased. You know, a lot better than I thought we would do. I mean, we were saying in the pre-season one that, you know, if we come away with like 7 points or something from these opening fixtures, then we've had a good time. So I think we've had a pretty good time. We've been competitive in all but two games, I think, and they were the ones against Chelsea and Liverpool. The ones against Liverpool, they're all set piece goals. So
that's good. You had a couple of chances at 1-0, even at Anfield, mate.
I mean, we could have walked away with more points from probably every game we played besides the Chelsea one. Obviously, two of the last three games, we've dropped points within the last second of the game, which is frustrating to say the least. It's a bit gutting. With those 4 points, we could have been top half, which would be even more rosy. But eight games, I couldn't really ask for much more. The performances have been there. We've been attacking. It was only really when he brought Tompkins on yesterday that kind of showed a bit more, or we'll hold what we have sort of thing, the old sort of what Roy used to do. But other than that, we've been pressing, impressive. Elise has been a game changer when he's come on. Edouard has scored since his opening brace, which I was a bit worried that he'd turned from Celtic Edouard into Palace Edouard, and he was going to be one of those ones that has loads of chances and never scores. But thankfully, he put that one away. But yeah, I'm very happy at the moment.
Teams you've played so far and your full team, which I think is very reasonable on the fixture list that you've had. The teams you've played currently sit in positions 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11 and 12. The two teams in the bottom half are Leicester and Arsenal, who we don't expect to finish in those positions. And you'd argue when we identified three home fixtures in your first 10, Brentford, Brighton and Newcastle was very winnable. Brentford have obviously impressed everybody so far and Brighton are currently fourth. You obviously threw away that Monday night game.
Yeah, we lost 1-0 in that game, yeah.
You lost 1-0. You lost 2-2 on Monday night against Arsenal as well. You must be impressed. I've been impressed with what I've seen with you in terms of the brand of football that you're playing. Like, you're playing proper passing football. You're not afraid to go direct. You're still playing counter-attacking football. But a whole attacking phase and starting play, even all the way from the goalkeeper. I think Gator's probably played more short passes in the first 8 games than he's done in the last 8 months, I would have thought.
Yeah, he probably had to have a whole new section of training just to practice a short pass. I mean, we've been described as interesting and entertaining in the last few days, which is just incredible to hear.
Are you stealing my tweet, Nick?
it's quoted from someone, I'm sure. I'm not sure what the source is. But yeah, I'm completely different to what it was the last few seasons, where there'd be drab affairs. We'd go possibly 1-0 up and then try and hold on for the rest of the game. I mean, the first halves haven't been great. I mean, we're basically a team of two halves at the moment. We've scored one goal in the first half and we've scored 9 in the second. So if we could keep teams to 0-0 at half time, we could win the league.
Do you think there's anything in that, the fact that your second half performances are stepping up? Is it kind of slanted by the fact that you obviously battered Tottenham after they went down to 10 men in the second half. You were chasing the game against Leicester and Arsenal. That's seven of the goals there.
Mm.
Is it just a case of that, do you think?
Possibly, but then that's a good enough sign for me at the moment anyway, that we're not just kind of, oh, we're 1-0 down at half-time. Let's try and keep it a 1-0 and maybe sneak a goal. We're like, right, no, let's go out. Let's try and win this game because we possibly can. We're only one goal behind, or we're 0-0 or whatever it was. And it shows an intent of Vieira wanting to win games, which hasn't seemed like it's been there for a few years. It's more like, let's maintain what we have in the game rather than let's try and get more. I mean, obviously it's bit us in the behind a couple of times a season, but some sloppy mistakes that have cost us points, but those are the sort of things that be trained out of players, hopefully. And most of them are young. So, you know, we're going to be,
yeah,
which is odd,
yeah,
by itself.
Absolutely. And I think we'll come back to some of the attacking talent, but so impressive Monday night to know that you're still integrating Elise into the team. Eze is going to come back. And obviously it's been well documented. You can't cope without Wilfried Zaha, but you did on Monday night. It was really, really impressive, yeah, actually. Sai, Mig, have a bit of food.
Oh, cheers.
Before we talk takeover and stuff, and don't worry, we will get there. Time of recording is Tuesday evening. Time of recording, Steve Bruce is manager. Do you expect him to be manager at Selhurst Park on Saturday?
Just let me refresh Twitter. Seems
it's a bit like that, isn't it?
The latest news.
I came on this. Well, I was thinking about this pod, and my original thought was yes, they would give him the Palace game. Then, spoiler alert, we would lose, play terribly, and then he would be sacked before he even got to the team bus. And then he'd be given the next home game, whoever the new manager is, or whether it was kind of given to Graham Jones or not. But all of this kind of Eddie Howe news seems to have like a little bit more actual authenticity to it from some of the sources that have been talking about it. And there's been some stuff that's come out about, apparently they were in talks previously when PIF and the consortium thought that they were going to get the deal pushed through a year ago. So possibly he comes in charge. I still don't know if it's going to be pushed through in the next couple of days. And I have a kind of theory on how I think a lot of the motions and things that are going to be going on at Newcastle, while very positive, I think might take a bit of time. I think that's because of the structure of the personalities, the individuals, and the different consortium elements involved. I don't think anything with this club is going to be done rashly, and I don't think anything is going to be done that quickly. And I think you can see that from the fact that they didn't announce a statement on Bruce was staying for 4 or 5 days after, I think it was on the Thursday, just before his press conference, even though apparently they had the conversation on Monday and they decided that at that point he was going to stay for the Spurs game. So I don't know if they're going to be able to push that through this week. I think they're just going to basically give him Palace and then see what happens.
But either way, we're talking about an inevitability here, like 100% certainty, aren't we, that he's going to go?
Yeah, I think he knows it. I think everyone knows it.
Yeah.
I did think it was quite funny seeing Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher having a go at the Newcastle new owners for not sacking him. I thought that was a new one. New little yes. wrinkle in the coverage for not sacking a manager, putting him out of his misery. But yeah, I think it's inevitability. I think you saw that on... And obviously, you'd have watched the game. I don't think you went to the game, did you, the weekend?
No, I can't remember a lot of it, mate.
No. Yeah, I saw you tweet about having had 4 beers before the game started. And
yeah, it was an unusual decision of mine, which was regrettable. But anyway, we move on. We digress.
Yeah. I can't remember what point I was making now. I was just looking at what Mick was eating.
Go on, Mum.
Good, thanks, Mick. Zoom doesn't quite work like that. I think we know he's going. I think... I can understand Neville and Carragher's comments for those who didn't see it on Monday night, basically saying, look, you should have sacked him, was basically based on the statement last week of we need to assess what's going on, but it was no backing for him. And I think they were kind of caught between a rock and a hard place in terms of we haven't got the next man lined up. We're better off leaving you in charge for the moment, but we don't want to get on the wrong side of the fans having just walked in the door and said, oh yeah, Bruce is in charge till the end of the season. They've basically just kind of sat in the middle and been non-committal, haven't they?
Well, he can't be in charge for the rest of the season. I mean, just based on his record alone, I think it's a case of like who's available out there. Eddie Howe seems to be the obvious choice. The challenge is with that is obviously the January transfer window. If you look at all takeovers of all clubs, the first manager through the door with new owners is never the one that actually leads that team to any, you know, crumbs of success. That person is always the transition manager. So really it's a case of, does Eddie Howe want to be that? Does he back himself enough to be, you know, given not just this rest of this season, but next season or a 3-year deal? I mean, the club could pay him for 5 years or give him an Alan Pardew 8-year contract and sack him in 2 weeks. It doesn't matter to them in terms of like the money. It's really like, you know, what's the structure? What's the long-term plan? Is there a kind of an agreement that he'll take it on till the end of the season? I don't know if he'll be happy to do that, being interim manager. But beyond 18 months, I don't know. It feels like an inevitability with him being in charge that he's going to leave anyway. But I don't know. I'm kind of new to all this optimism.
I get that.
Thinking of how you progress from a shit manager onto someone.
What you said about the fact that there might have been talks with Howe quite a while ago, I think probably rings true, because actually, ironically, I think, Mig, you sounded him out to potentially be your next manager. And I think the word wasn't interested, and it felt like a bizarre one, because actually it felt like a kind of a nice fit. Yeah. Actually, in terms of young coach, British, what Palace might have been looking for. So it seemed a strange one that he had no interest in even having talks with Palace. And I wonder if it's because of that, that he knew that this was going to come up at some point.
Possibly. He would have got paid. He would get paid a lot more. That's a certainty,
isn't it? I mean, it's not a job you'd refuse at the moment, is it? You almost can't lose with it. What's the worst case scenario? He's shit and he gets a big payoff. It's reality.
Word for Jose, isn't it?
Well, is that how you feel, Si? A little bit like I felt with my previous manager, just like anybody else. Is that how you feel, Si?
Oh, yeah. And it's been that way for a long time. But I think it's a completely unique situation we're in now that it just needs a change. It needs a refresh. The only thing that if you're going to defend Bruce, you look at the team that played against Spurs and 5 of the starting 11 played for us in the Championship. And he's kind of stuck with that squad, or whoever comes in is stuck with that squad. But there definitely are things that can be improved. Tactics, pressing, fitness, everything else. You can bring in backroom staff, which you wouldn't, like, no one's going to come and work for Steve Bruce now. I mean, he's going to be potentially out the door before the weekend. So there are things that could be improved before the transfer window. And I think there are things that need to be improved and will be improved on the coaching side.
Just as now, I know it's really difficult when we think Eddie Howe is probably going to take the job. We don't know. But how confident are you about the rest of this season? Forget the money and stuff. We know you'll probably spend some in January. Are you concerned at the moment?
Oh, I mean, I'm concerned by the fact that we played 8 games or 9 games now and looked shit and have, you know, scraped a couple of draws, dropped points when we shouldn't have. The squad isn't good enough. And I think it's kind of regressed. Even if you look at some of our kind of more established players, like Lascelles just doesn't look up to it right now or anymore. I don't know if he's kind of plateaued in the last couple of years. He looks fit. I just don't know. There's something not quite there. I thought I might see that again at the weekend, you know, with the takeover and being sort of the captain of the club and leading them out. But his performance lacked any kind of real leadership qualities. Interesting to see St. Maximin back playing with Wilson as well. Particularly, I'm going to plug your video that you posted for Planet FPL Patrons. I think it was a patrons only video, wasn't it?
But I shared it with you because it was all about your team.
Very good. Anyone that's not a patron should actually sign up to it just to
Thanks,
watch.
Thanks, Si. I'll do the sell at the end. You don't need to.
In summary, he's not as good when Wilson's playing. He plays more drifts, more wide. I think we saw that in that game. So if you're looking at the positives of Eddie Howe coming in, I think he would work on that system with them. If you look at the way that Bournemouth played a lot, it was with kind of two strikers dovetailing each other, maybe one dropping deeper. I know he didn't end his relationship with Fraser very well, but I'd still like to try and see Almer and Fraser, St. Maximin and Wilson in the same team at least once. Would be nice to see how that goes. And I think he's the sort of manager that would try it. We'll still probably get beat more than we win, but I think he would inject enough freshness into the squad and the team that we'd stay up with a few signings.
Yeah, agreed. We'll come back onto some of the personnel. Mig, obviously you've had a really difficult start in terms of fixtures. That must mean there's some good ones coming. Newcastle this week, then another easy game away to Manchester City. But in all seriousness, after that, Wolves at home, Burnley away. And I tell you what's really interesting for those who have already used their first wild card, which I feel like is the majority of people. I don't think your fixtures ever get bad again. You've got a three-game run, game week 31 to 33. Arsenal, Leicester and Everton doesn't look pretty. But actually, all the rest of the times you play one of the big ones, it's just like an odd one dropped in the middle of good fixtures. So it does mean I think we can look at your assets with some longer-term thinking. What's your thought on the defensive players? I know a few are starting to get mentions towards Palace players. Is there anything that kind of splits them to make you think, oh, I'd want to get Mitchell or I'd want to get Gaita if you were to invest in them?
Gaita's always the main one that sort of stands out because basically he's dropped in price this year. He's 4.5. I don't think he's gone up to 4.6 yet. No. He's always there for save points. He made the odd, he's probably not going to get clean sheets every week, but he's there for the save points. Mitchell's been a lot more attacking this season, I think, especially in the last game. He was getting a lot further up the field. He was mainly there for his defensive abilities, and Ward was sort of seen as more of the more attacking player who has nailed that right back spot. That was sort of a 50-50 going into the season. I didn't know if they were going with Ward or Klein. Klein's only played in the Carabao Cup, I think that's Ward's fine. I've got Ward in the draft team as far as I got, but I think centre-backs are always the ones that tend to get the bonus points if you keep a clean sheet, but neither of them have really shown too much attacking threat at a corner. I'm not sure if that's just because we haven't been that great with our corners or they just haven't been in and around where the threat should be. But yeah, if you were going for Palace defence, it'd probably be either Guaita if you're going to swap out Sanchez and you, for some reason, you can't afford Ramsdale because, he's been probably the form keeper at the moment. Then, Guaita's a good option. Either that, I'd probably maybe side with Ward, I think, over the Mitchell and Ward. He's probably...
Oh, really? I was surprised you say that.
Yeah, I think he is accustomed to a bit of a yellow card, but I think he gets round on the overlap a bit more than Mitchell does. Mitchell's getting better, and he's shown a lot more attacking threat. But I think at the moment, Ward is probably the more attacking of the two.
Just looking across the back four, because they're all 4.5.
Yeah,
and they're all absolutely nailed as far as I can tell at the moment. I mean, they've all played every game since Anderson had come in a bit late and missed the first game at Chelsea. Ward and Anderson have had two yellow cards. Anderson's had one bonus point. Other than that, there's nothing like to split these guys basically on anything. I'd have just thought you might have said Mitchell was possibly the most adventurous. And yeah, I picked that up from the Arsenal game as well.
Yeah, in the Arsenal one, he was a lot better.
Agreed. Would you think of the centre back pairing just generally?
I think they've done really well. I think they've gelled pretty quickly. There's still those odd few times, like with the Brighton last minute goal, where there's confusion amongst the two of them. But I think as a partnership, they've looked solid. I think they've been one of the top partnerships in the league so far for clearances and interceptions and all that. Under stats and all that sort of stuff, but I'm for people who are like, oh, they're buying a Fulham reject and a kid from Chelsea, I think they've gelled really well, and hopefully it'll be a blossoming partnership for a few years yet, and people, big teams like Newcastle don't come in and steal them or anything.
Could do, mate. Could do. Anderson had the kind of one big mistake against Leicester, lack of concentration. And I think it was Gay really was at fault for the Morpay goal as well.
He let it bounce.
But good partnership. I mean, particularly in the case of Anderson, surprised, we said it in the summer, surprised that you got him. So we thought it was like consistent top half teams with respect were going to go out and buy him. I know Tottenham had a long interest in him and obviously decided to go elsewhere. The great coup for you. I think they're really good as a centre-back partnership. I think they've got a nice blend of each other's characteristics. Like Anderson's extremely good on the ball. Gay's more kind of physical, a bit quicker on the turn and stuff like that as well. And I think they're a good pairing. What about Newcastle defenders, Si? Javier Manquillo, 4.0.
It doesn't look like he's leaving the team anytime soon.
I can't believe it, personally.
Although I'm surprised Murphy got dropped in the first place. I think just defensively, he's not quite at it, especially in a back four. But yeah, as a fifth defender, yeah, why not? You're probably never gonna play him, and he looks like he's got the shirt at least until January. So I think fullbacks are definitely going to be high on the agenda for new signings if we can get the right players in.
I think it's exactly that. If you want a fifth defender and you've got no intention of kind of using it as a rotational option, then he's got to stand out at the moment as a 4.0 who's playing every week. Now, new manager might think completely different of that, obviously. There are a few home games coming up as well. You've got this really interesting run. I think it's going to be big for you, Si. 12 to 15. You've got Arsenal away in 13, Brentford at home at 12, then Norwich and Burnley both at home 14, 15. And I think for people like myself who are looking to wildcard in 16, probably, that actually your assets really appeal as kind of a late kind of, do you know what? I'll go and have a look at Manquillo for four game weeks if I've got a cheap defensive issue there, or if it frees up some money somewhere else. And actually, you could use him as a starter if he's still in the team by then, which is very unpredictable. But if I was wildcarding now, I'd possibly consider him, actually.
Yeah, potentially. I think good fit out. I couldn't really vouch for any other players right now if someone was going on a wildcard. I mean, I own St. Maximin, and I think he'll stay for the Palace game, but Chelsea at home after that, Brighton away, we typically don't play very well down there. And then
there's the four games, though.
Then it's the four games. It's really, yeah, I think it's, if you don't own them, it's wait and see what happens with the manager. Can the results improve? Can the performances improve? Does the system change? Is everyone still fit at that point? You never quite know whether all of our kind of main key players are still going to be, you know, around in a couple of weeks' time. That's kind of been an ongoing problem as well. So, yeah, I think wait and see. I definitely think for this Palace game, I mean, I'm almost tempted to sell, actually, just knowing that Chelsea are up after that. Although we've always had quite a good record against them. I don't know. I don't see it. Depends what happens with the manager, really. But I just think, you know, B1 Endor, is this squad's not good enough. And it might be that, you know, the January transfer window comes and we've got Southampton away and then Watford at home in the first 2 weeks of January. I think there's an international break, is there? Or is there's the winter break?
You might be dead and buried by then, looking at the five fixtures before that, if you have a bad run over the next sort of six or seven, mate.
I can't.
Your Christmas is horrendous.
Yeah, it's really bad. It always is, though. And they've just moved the...
Yeah, I know. You said that before.
...to TV. So for, like, the fans, it's just classic shitting on the fans, making them travel, like, ridiculous distances like they always do. But, yeah, no, I don't think we'll be dead and buried. I don't think there's enough good teams. Like, there's not, like, you know, there's Watford, who are likely still going to be down there. Norwich will still be down there. Burnley, I don't know if they're going to really pull away. So, like, I think we'll still be, like, there or thereabouts. And we only just need to be in touching distance. And I think, really, regardless of who the manager is, I think there's enough kind of Premier League talent out there that will be available that we can either get in for, you know, ridiculously high loan fees for 6 months or, you know, just players that will then eventually kind of become good, solid squad players. And to be honest, for this season, and actually for the next couple of seasons, I'm just like happy to see some progression year on year, you know, get a good manager in for a couple of years, play some good football, actually try and win games, kind of like what's happened with Palace this summer. It's interesting. You obviously that we got paired together for this week, that the transition that they've gone from Roy Hodgson to Patrick Vieira and the players they've brought in, if this takeover had happened, it may have been like, he might have been our manager for this season. And I think some of the players that you bought, really good young players or like proven to a certain extent, you know, probably would have maybe picked up some of those players. So like really impressed with what they've done in the summer. And to be honest, if we were in that position next year, I'd be perfectly happy. I'm not like screaming to try and sign Mbappes and stuff of this world. I just want to see, you know, some nice football.
Some Wilfried Zahars or Ebrecht.
I'd take Saha. I think he's probably the best player outside of the top six that's never going to play in the top six, to be honest, at this stage.
He might if he joins you, mate.
Well, exactly. So I think actually, I don't know whether Palace would be willing to sell for stupid money. He probably would, but it's not necessarily a position we massively need to strengthen. But if it's within the budget and we've already secured the centre-backs and centre-midfield and wing-backs and every other position we need to fill to improve our squad, I think he'd do really well. And I think it might be something he'd be interested in, to be honest.
It's interesting, isn't it, Big? Because this summer has kind of been the first one for a while where we haven't been Wilfried Zaha's knocking on the door to leave, or it was a very, very quiet summer for him. I guess just naturally, I mean, Newcastle are going to get linked with everybody like that, basically.
I got linked with them the other day. I don't even play football.
Was it a managerial job, was it?
Possibly, no. Yeah. I did get a green arrow this week, so.
Although there already is a Miggy at the club, so I don't know how that would work.
Oh, Miggy Almiron.
You'd have to go.
Yeah, I mean, the opposite to Armageddon has actually happened here. So tell us about some of these attacking players, Mig. It feels like Benteke stepped up a little bit since Edouard's come in. Is that coincidental?
Yeah, I'm sure it hasn't been a purposeful, whoops, I'm going to lose my spot here now. I was worried that he would just sort of keep Benteke in for the time and then just sort of phase Edouard in. But he was like, right, he's had two games. Right, Edouard's straight in now. And he looked all right. He had the same sort of thing. He was like, he's had good movement. He's getting in the right places, but he's not scoring. I've got to give Benteke credit. He took the goal well yesterday. I didn't think he'd be that confident just to slip it in the bottom corner. I thought he was going to be a bit rash with it, so you know, credit to him.
He finished it really well, actually.
He did, yeah. I know he's
also he also did the LeBron James celebration as well, which I thought was a little bit much with the kind of chest, the knee pumping thing. I was like,
he always does
that, I think, in fairness.
Yeah, it just gets rare because he doesn't do it that often.
I honestly haven't seen him.
And he scores like three goals at the end of the season when he needs a new contract, doesn't he, Mick?
Especially against Arsenal, he loves scoring against Arsenal, but I think it's helping with having the players around him. I mean, he's the sort of player that needs good supply to him, whether it's in the air or something he can cushion down and take on. Because he's not going to be beating defenders, you know, hanging on to their shoulders and beating them with pace. He's going to need that supply, which he would hopefully get from someone like Elise or Eze or Zaha. He's industrial. He always puts the effort in. He's always chasing, as evident for the assist for Benteke. He was always him closing down. I wanted an out and out right winger because I know Eze is more of a striker, and you know there are times when he's gone for a shot when he could have slotted it through to someone else. But I can't hate on the guy, you know. I like him, but you know, Elise should be starting ahead of them.
Elise at time of recording is 0.01% owned. We did a podcast earlier today on Tuesday, and he was 0.0% owned. So somebody's kind of taking notice there's a bit of a weird one to tip someone up at that sort of ownership, but actually he's interesting, isn't it? It feels like the game on Saturday could be the right time to bring him in, actually. Is he 5.4, I want to say, Mick?
Yeah, I think he dropped because him and Gallagher went the opposite directions.
And obviously, look, I mean, he's got two attacking returns in 68 minutes so far. That's gonna get people's attention,
isn't it?
Salah
level of, you know.
It's better than Salah, mate.
Exactly, for like nearly a third of the price. I think obviously the outstanding option at the moment is Gallagher, just for the price he was and the form he's shown throughout the whole season, pretty much. If you're looking for if you're wildcarding at the moment and you're looking for those odd 0.1s, 0.2s, you know, going for a Mankilo over a Livramento because you need that 0.1, that 0.2, going for someone like Elise over Gallagher for those 0.3, I think, is in at the moment. But obviously, that's if he starts getting starts. I mean, obviously, you know, he's getting returns at the moment, but he's coming on with 20 minutes to go, 10 minutes to go. That's not exactly what you want for probably what would be your fourth midfielder at this point.
If I said to you, Biden, because there's a lot of people in there in a position with sort of like Jota, Greenwood, mm-hmm. Harvey Barnes. Yes, I had all three of them in the weekend just gone. It was suddenly looking down. And perhaps, I think the obvious one people talking about is Mbeumo. We're not going to cover that again now. But if you were looking at Palace, which I think a few people are beginning to do, because they're going, well, you can't tip me up Mbeumo and Rafinha. I've already got those players. I want to come down and then make another move somewhere else afterwards. Gallagher or Alisa, you would still go Gallagher, definitely, yeah?
For knowing that he's starting the games, he's always getting in the box. He's got a good shot on him. I mean, he almost scored yesterday. It was only a brilliant save from Ramsdale that denied him another goal. And the uncertainty over Alisa starting, which I think he's got to start soon.
Agreed.
But yeah, plus his ownership. I mean, Gallagher's ownership shot up over the last few weeks. So I think if you're looking for way out there picks, then Alisa is, you know, if he gets a couple of assists in the game, he's going to shoot you up the ranks. But I would side for Gallagher just for the safety, I guess, which is weird saying on the Palace asset.
No, I get that. You don't want to kind of bring a player in who might not start. And that's essentially that's where we're at with Alisa. But I think he is very much one to keep an eye on. It might be one comeback for game week 11 or 12 or so, because we say it's such a consistent run for you. I think he's one as well. Once he gets in the team, is stay in the team.
Yeah.
I think longer term, what you're looking at is probably Zaha and Alisa behind Edouard, I would have thought, mm-hmm. in the majority of games. I think Ezreal is going to transition into a central midfield player.
Yeah, I think the main thing I've seen is like having Edouard up top, Zaha on the left, Alisa on the right, and then Eze as a number 10 behind Edouard, which, you know, sounds exciting to me. Gallagher and probably MacArthur or Milivojevic behind him.
I can see it being Gallagher and Eze and one sitter behind being Milivojevic. And then with that front three, it's actually quite exciting, Mig. This is my point.
I don't know what to do.
But we should give MacArthur a mention,
mm-hmm.
because he is 4.5 and he's playing every game at the moment, isn't he? Is he mm-hmm. one, if you were wildcarding now, you'd think, yeah, that's my 4.5. Would you be concerned longer term about him?
Yeah, because you probably just escaped him getting a red card.
Yeah, so, there is that as well.
He's not going to probably hopefully doing that anytime soon again. I've had Brownhill since the start of the season, which, you know, hasn't exactly gone well, and he's dropped in price. But I've looked at getting MacArthur, but then like it was that weird thing. I was like, do I want to use up a Palace slot for MacArthur? And then I was like, why am I thinking that about Palace players? I may want to get Edouard.
Mig's worried about blocking himself, treble Palace. I never thought I'd see the day, mate.
I feel dizzy. I'm not going to lie.
It's good. It's good, mate. I think I think MacArthur's one to consider for people who are perhaps trying to transition formation, mm-hmm. perhaps want to go from 3-5-2 or to 4-3-3 and need to do it in a couple of quick essential moves. MacArthur's the sort of one you can drop the 4.5. You could play him in a fixture like this weekend and then shove the money afterwards, for example. And I think for wildcarders, he should be within that conversation. I take it, Si, you've got no one in the midfield you would recommend.
In the midfield from Newcastle?
Yeah.
No. Well, definitely not Jonjo Shelvey. Fuck me.
To be honest, I forgot he played for them.
To the new owners, eh? Come on for 10 minutes.
That was a brainless second yellow card, wasn't it?
I forgot he played for them, to be honest.
He has been injured for a while, in fairness, Jonjo Shelvey, so he'd just come back. Willock, 5.9. Is he underwhelming, Si? He is.
He's playing too deep. He's not kind of similar to what we're saying about St. Maximin when Wilson's in the team. He obviously had that run at the end of last season without Wilson in the team. And right now he's basically just playing centre mid. And you can see it on his face every time he gets subbed off with 10 minutes to go. It's preying on his mind, the fact he hasn't scored. So I owned him earlier in the season, dropped him. He's the sort of player I think you've just got to wait to see with the new manager where he fits him in. He actually feels like quite an Eddie Howe type player. So it'd be interesting to see how he uses him. And again, I think he's one of the players that you could put into that 11, at least for the, you know, if we signed some players in January and the summer, I think you could still kind of count on a spot for him. potentially. So I think there's room to grow. I think he just needs better players around him, some security in that midfield so he doesn't have to sit so deep, because at the moment that's kind of what he is. He's playing in a two or a three, depending where Hayden's playing. Not what he was doing towards the end of last season, but confidence is low. He's had a couple of like niggly injuries. There's no one in the midfield really, apart from, to be honest, like I was quite close to getting Murphy in instead of Saint-Maximin before he suddenly got dropped, because he looks
like him, Murphy.
Yeah, he looks dangerous when he plays, and he offers a lot when he definitely, I'd say, more than Mankio. But again, it comes down to kind of system. So none of these players are really kind of sticking out as options. I think Saint-Maximin's still playing well. He looks fit. He looks up for it. I think depending on the matchup, he'll still tick along some points, I think. But
you might let go.
Yeah.
It's a 4-5 scoring forward in the game, so.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, we'll see. Like, I don't know if that can continue or not. But interestingly enough, I mean, if you remember at the start of last season, this was the start of the season that I thought he was going to have last year. And, you know, same. It can continue. And I think, again, better players around. You get better players around him, Willock, and I don't know, probably that's probably the extent of the people that I believe in the 11. Wilson, obviously, he always gets injured. And I think he's like, he'd be, you know, a fantastic kind of like backup striker eventually.
Anything in that, though? Because the analysis I shared with you was basically he takes more onus when Wilson's not there. Obviously, his position is a little bit different as well. But I think there's certain things off the ball that when Wilson's there, he thinks, well, Wilson will make that run, I won't bother. He comes to feet a lot more.
Yeah, it's true. He had that one run where the Wilson played it through the defender's legs and he was quite close, and he made that kind of 30-yard sprint into the box, which is what he was making when Wilson wasn't there. So I think continue to play them as a two. I think they'll work better. But definitely, like, now he's kind of, I think he's cemented himself in that number 10 slot, as long as you know, Bruce doesn't piss around and stick him back on the wing again, which we kind of saw a bit of at Spurs, a bit too much of, I should say. But I think, you know, he's come out and said that he's number 10, he likes to play number 10, and he should be playing there.
So, quick hypothetical scenario for the pair of you. You own Cristiano Ronaldo, and you want to come down in money so you can spread the money somewhere else. You're going to buy Benteke, Edouard, Wilson, or Saint-Maximin. Mig, I'll start with you. Which one would you go for?
Edouard.
You'd go Edouard?
Yeah.
Si?
I would wait till January and sign Mbappe when he comes to Newcastle.
Bullshit.
Does Mbappe fit in that front line?
He's fifth choice striker.
He's going to be sit on the bench the whole time.
He is not getting in that team ahead of Almiron, and you well know that. Si. Now, go on. Wilson or Saint-Maximin, where would you go?
If you had to. Well, I definitely wouldn't pick Edouard just because my dad owns him, and he screamed in my face last night when he scored that goal.
Good man.
In the head-to-head, which was great. So, to be honest, you kind of, Wilson's fit. He's a bit more predictable in terms of his returns. So I'd probably pick him for the slight extra outlay. I think just, you saw it at the weekend, he only needs like one or two chances. And that, at the moment, this team is only going to create one or two chances. So the boring FPL pick would be him, but like IRL, it's always going to be Saint-Maximin, because he's a god.
I think the fact that there's only 0 point, and I think those who've got Saint-Maximin don't have to panic, but we said this on our pods last week, you have to be a little bit cautious that things might be about to change a little bit for Saint-Maximin. I don't think you particularly want to sell before playing Palace, although it's a far more difficult fixture than it may have looked prior to game week one. I think if you were buying one now, it would be Wilson. And I think Wilson's going to be a serious consideration for me in the next few weeks. I think particularly that period, Si, 12 to 15, even for myself, just literally going for Norwich at home and Burnley at home, 14 and 15, if I'm going to wildcard in 16. I think I'll bet you I have Callum Wilson, 14 and 15.
Yeah, I might do too. I already owned him this season once. And I think last year I dipped in about 3 or 4 times over the year.
I started with him.
Bit of an addict when it comes to Callum Wilson. He's got this kind of reputation that people seem to like dislike him when he scores points. I don't get it. His ownership's never that high. He's not that expensive,
and he plays for Newcastle.
Yeah, and he plays for Newcastle. So there's almost like a surprise, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see if he gets some more help, and he could become a really good option in January, because I don't know what strikers are out there or whether you know, that's really, I think we will end up buying a striker. The question is, do you buy someone to replace Wilson in the team and then relegate him to second, or do you go and plug your kind of weakest points in your team? And I think, to be honest, that's what I would do. You strengthen the weakest areas of your team.
Yeah, Callum Wilson's fine staying that team for at least the rest of this season.
If he's not injured, I do think we need someone else just in case he does get injured. But, you know, there's enough kind of proven old-timer loanies that we could get in, I think, or like try and get someone like, I don't know, Man U's not going to sell anyone to us, but like Cavani or someone, if his deal's running out and he's not getting minutes, slap in.
You know what? It's an interesting shout.
Yeah.
Is that sort of thing? You're going to need a strong manager to, because obviously the owners are going to be like, well, we want to bring in this big name, you know, going to sell shirts and stuff like that. You're going to need a strong manager that goes, well, no, we need fullbacks because we need to stay up. We need centre back, you know, we need to fill these problems before we start spending hundreds of millions of pounds on people.
I think the new owners know that the squad isn't good enough in pretty much every area. So I think it's going to be a question of like who's available. And there's a lot of talk of looking at kind of what Man City did and the turnover of players when they had their takeover and they went on that kind of spending spree, and they bought something like 24 players in their first in one transfer window or something. Someone saying, I don't even remember that. That was quoted in the paper, like madness. We're not going to do that. I don't think we should do that. I don't think we will. I think it's just going to be like who's available. And the priority for the end of this season will be just to stay up, ironically.
Yeah,
and it's that, like, our ambition is to stay up, which, you know, we've kind of cried about for the last 15 years, but so much like excitement and things that are going to happen, and just the fact that we're finally kind of progressing. You can see like all the emotion that was in the game at the weekend. Kind of weird that we scored in the first 2 minutes, because that almost kind of ruined it and everyone started paying attention to the football. I think if they're like it just a dour first 20 minutes, people would have just been kind of more soaked into the atmosphere and less into the game. But it's going to be an interesting ride for sure. But definitely, I think every fan, like if you said we're not going to win the Premiership for 10 years, I don't know. I personally, like, I'm not that bothered about it. I wouldn't be ranting and raving. As long as like we progress, honestly, it's been that bad for the last 14 to the last 10 years that just progress. Win a cup would be nice and just get some good players in.
You've never seen one of you. So, no, I get that completely. You're obviously happy. I think as much as anything else that Ashley's gone and Steve Bruce is going, that's the biggest thing. How do you feel generally, though, about the people that have taken over the club?
Well, I mean, we're just getting to know them, really. And you can judge them on like past discretions. You can judge them on like the newspaper coverage of what like some of the representatives have or haven't done. I think everyone associated with Newcastle is will continue to do the same thing that we've done through previous regimes. And this goes back to like the 1970s, is we hold people in power to account. So I don't think you're going to get one. You're not going to get a massive amount of Newcastle fans that are going to judge them based on all of the allegations that are flying around and all of that stuff. But if any of that shit happens, or if they suddenly rock up and start discriminating against certain groups, the Newcastle fans will let them know that that's not all right, because they're representing our club now. And I think that's how a lot of fans feel, is it is what it is. Football's like a dirty business in terms of the money. You look at I don't know if there's one like club in the Premier League that you could say is completely 100% squeaky clean when it comes to how they make their revenues or how the owners got where they are in life. But definitely from this point forward, now that they're custodians of our club, they're going to be held to account. And I think really, as Newcastle fans, that's all we should be expected to do, to be honest.
Well said, Matt. Well said. Right, before we finish, guys, let's do predictions for weekend. Correct score from yourself, please, Mick.
2-1 Palace.
2-1 Palace. Site?
Okay. If Steve Bruce is still in charge, which I kind of weirdly think he still will be, we're definitely losing. I would say 2-0 Palace.
And if he's not, if Eddie Howe's sitting in the dugout on Saturday, 2-0 Palace.
2-1 Palace, or maybe 3-2, because that's what happened to me on FIFA the other night when I was playing the fixture.
Okay.
Yeah.
How shit are you at FIFA?
I am bad. I'll tell you who scored too. I don't know if you've ever heard of this player. He's actually in FPL. Let me just quickly look him up. He's like an 18-year-old
kid. Rakitić?
Yes. Yeah, scored two.
I was there.
This kid. I looked him up and I was like, oh, 4.5.
Mm. So he does well for the academy team.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. He might be a talent. He certainly, they rate him and...
Stay away from him.
Rate him on that computer.
You're going to get loads of this stay away stuff, Si, unfortunately, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, apparently we've got to stay away from any Saudi Arabian companies as well, based on that new Premier League ruling that's just come through. So
we'll have our eyes on that story, yeah.
Yeah, fun times. But yeah, just happy to be here. It's nice to be on with Mig as well. I should say that I was an avid listener of FPL Popping Pod as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was good.
I've met a fan.
Exactly.
There was like four people. It was great.
You two actually met the first ever Planet FPL Live.
Hmm. Yeah, it's true. And it's nice to be on a podcast with you, particularly as like Palace, I think, is a good model for... Honestly, like where we're kind of, you know, forget the money. I think just in terms of like where we'd like to be with a transition period, I think it's a good one. So I'd say, yeah, hopefully you can hold on to the players because we might just go and nick your manager and your players in 12 months and then you can come to Newcastle, I guess.
I will go for 3-1 Palace on Saturday.
I
never thought I'd be predicting you to win a game of football by more than a goal.
No, you did it last time we lost.
Did I? Did Sheffield United or something? I might get away with that. I'm very impressed with what I say. And I think you should actually have people's attention over the next couple of months, both in fantasy and in real life as well. I think, Si, the period you've got coming up, probably after the Chelsea fixture, at kind of 11 till 15, and then Leicester away in 16, and then there's a grim Christmas. It's going to be absolutely, absolutely huge. But I'm pleased for you as a Newcastle fan that you've got rid of the previous owner and that you're positive about the direction where it might be going. And I think, Mig, you very much should be about your club as well. Before you go, where can the guys follow you on Twitter, Mig?
You're at Migtavius, MIGTAVIUS. There's no O.
And Si?
I actually have started tweeting a bit more at FPL_footballer.
We can always tell when you're in a more positive frame of mind. Thank you both and good luck for the weekend, guys. Next week's Clash of the Correspondents, I can tell you, will be Liverpool versus Brighton with FPL Loco Lord and FPL Seagull ahead of game week 10. Tomorrow we will have a podcast out for you. I don't know what as yet because it's a Friday deadline, so it's a little bit confusing this week. But yes, do remember, Friday deadline in FPL this week is 6:30 p.m. UK time. Other than that, thanks again to Mig and to Si. Cue music, please, Manchild.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Podcast Network.